Inside Out and Back Again, Reading Assignment, number 7, pages 73 to 90. Part 2 at sea. Floating. Our ship creeps along the river route without lights, without cooking, without bathrooms. We are told to sip water only when we must so our bodies can stop needing. Mine won't listen. Mother sighs. I don't blame her, having a daughter who's either dying of thirst or demanding release. Other girls must be made of bamboo, bending whichever way they are told. Mother tells Uncle Soane, I need a bathroom. We are allowed into the commander's cabin, where the bathroom is so white and clean, so worth the embarrassment. May 1st. Slowly. I nibble on the last clump of cooked rice from my sack, hard and moldy, yet chewy and sweet inside. I chew each grain slowly. I hear others chew, but have never seen anyone actually eating. No one has offered to share what I smell. Sardines, dried durian, salted eggs, toasted sesame. I lean toward the family on the next mat. Mother firmly shakes her head. She looks so sad as she pats my hand. May 2nd. Rations. On the third day, we join the sea toward Thailand. The commander says it's safe enough for his men to cook, for us to go above deck, for all to smile a little. He says there's enough rice and water for 3 weeks, but rescue should happen much earlier. Do not worry, ships from all countries are out looking for us. Morning, noon, and night, we each get one clump of rice, small, medium, large, according to our height, plus one cup of water, no matter our size. The first hot bite of freshly cooked rice, plump and nutty, makes me imagine the taste of ripe papaya, although one has nothing to do with the other. May 3rd. Routine. Mother cannot allow idle children, hers or anyone else's. After 1 week on the ship, Brother Kwan begins English lessons. I wish he would keep it to, how are you? This is a pen. But when an adult is not there, he says, we must consider the shame of abandoning our own country and begging toward the unknown where we will all begin again at the lowest level on the social scale. It's better in the afternoons with Brother Vu, who just wants us to do front kicks and back kicks, at times adding 1-2 punches. Brother Koi gets to monitor lines for the bathrooms, where bottoms stick out to the sea behind blankets blowing in the wind. When not in class, I have to stay within sight of Mother, like a baby. Mother gives me her writing pad. Write tiny. There's but one pad. Writing becomes boring, so I draw over my words. Pouches of pan-fried shredded coconut, tamarind paste on banana leaf, steamed corn on the cob, rounds of fried dough, wedges of pineapple on a stick, and of course, cubes of papaya, tender and shiny. Mother smoothed back my hair, knowing the pain of a girl who loves snacks, but is stranded on a ship. May 7th. Once knew. Water, water everywhere, making me think land is just something I once knew, like napping on a hammock, bathing without salt, watching Mother write, laughing for no reason, kicking up powdery dirt, and wearing clean nightclothes, smelling of the sun. May 12th. Brother Koi's secret. Brother Koi stinks. We cannot ignore it. He stews and sweats in a jacket he won't take off. Forced to sponge wipe twice a day, he wraps the jacket around his waist. He keeps clutching something in the left pocket where the stench grows. Neighbors complain, even the ones 8 mats away, saying it's bad enough being trapped in putrid hot air made from fermented bodies and oily sweat. Must everybody also endure something rotten? Finally, Brother Vu holds Brother Koi down and forces him to open his hand. A flattened chick lies crooked, neck dangling off his palm. The chick had not a chance after we shoved for hours to board. Brother Koi screams, kicks everything off our mats. Brother Kwan carries him above deck, quiet. May 13th. Last respects. After 2 weeks at sea, the commander calls all of us above deck at a formal lowering of our yellow flag with 3 red stripes. South Vietnam no longer exists. One woman tries to throw herself overboard, screaming that without a country she cannot live. As they wrestle her down, a man stabs his heart with a toothbrush. I don't know them, so their pain seems unreal next to Brother Koi's, whose eyes are as wild as those of his broken chick. I hold his hand. Come with me. He doesn't resist. Alone at the back of the ship, I open Mother's white handkerchief. Inside lies my mouse-bitten doll, her arms wrapped around the limp, fuzzy body of his chick. I tie it all into a bundle. Brother Coy nods, and I smile. But I regret not having my doll as soon as the white bundle sinks into the sea. May 14th. One engine. In the middle of the night, our ship stops. Mother hugs me, hearts drumming as one. If the communists catch us fleeing, it's a million times worse than staying at home. After many shouts and much time, the ship moves forward with just one engine. Mother would not release me. The commander says, Thailand is much farther on one engine. It was risky to take the river route. We escaped bombs but missed the rescue ships. The commander decides the ration is now half a clump of rice, only at morning and night, and one cup of water all day. Sip, he says, and don't waste strength moving around because it's impossible to predict how much longer we will be floating. May 16th. The moon. During the day, the deck belongs to men and children. At nightfall, women make their way up. In single files, they sponge bath and relieve themselves behind blanket curtains. I always stand in line with Mother. Every night, she points upward. At least the moon remains unchanged. Your father could be looking at the same round moon. He may already understand we will wait for him across the world. I feel guilty, having not once thought of Father. I can't wish for him to appear until I know where we'll be. May 18th. That's the end of reading assignment number 7.